you've agreed to 3 more televised debates with your Democratic opponent, Tim Kaine, in September and October. He's signaled a willingness to do more than that. Will you agree to more debates than those 3?
Well, we've had 8 debates so far in my campaign, 2 with Tim and 3 in the Republicans. And so those were the ones that have been agreed to. We have forums and so forth together. In fact, the one we're doing in Richmond, most of these are televised, so people watch them all over Virginia. And so we'll have debates, and we have these ones set up, and those are the ones that have been agreed to.
Well, you and Governor Kaine have been locked in a pretty steady statistical tie in most recent polls,
yeah.
Including a new one that was just out, Quinnipiac, New York Times, CBS poll, that also shows President Obama again with a slight lead over Governor Romney in Virginia. How closely are your fortunes in the Senate campaign tied to those of Governor Romney in Virginia?
Well, Bob, I'm not a political scientist. I'll let those make those comments. The polls generally, as you say, there's always been virtually tied or, you know, statistical dead heats between Tim Kaine and myself. And folks do know me. I've served Virginians as governor and as senator, and Tim's served as governor as well. And we have different records as far as who's done a better job in creating more job opportunities for people, for example, or differences on taxes or energy policy. Mitt Romney, generally in these polls this year, has been running behind us. Ours are tied, and he's usually, even in that poll, I think he's running maybe a couple points behind. I think as more people get to know Mitt Romney, and he's going to be here this weekend from the Hampton Roads area to the Richmond area to Northern Virginia, I think as people get to know him, it'll undoubtedly tighten up, because I think most people don't feel our country's going in the right direction. They'd like to see more job opportunities for their children, especially those who are in college these days or graduating from college. So the campaigns are working together as a team that way. I think our philosophies are pretty similar, and the issues we're running on are pretty similar as well. For example, I've promised the people of Virginia, if I'm hired on to represent Virginians in the U.S. Senate, on day one, I'm going to introduce a bill to allow us in Virginia to produce oil and natural gas off our coast and then use those royalties for roads and transportation. President Obama's been saying no to us. Mitt Romney has even run ads saying that he thinks Virginia ought to be able to produce energy off our coast. So that's an example. He's running ads on an issue that I've long advocated, and there's a symmetry, which shouldn't be surprising. And Tim Kaine and President Obama are good friends, and he's said he's, quote, an unabashed supporter of President Obama and thinks this health care tax law is, quote, a great achievement, and I would like to be the 51st vote to repeal it. So the issues are pretty similar in both campaigns.
What would you vote to replace Obamacare, as it's sometimes called, with in the Senate? There's been a lot of talk about repeal. What's replace?
Great question. Thank you, Bob. Because I don't think the health care system before this current government takeover of health care was such a great idea to begin with.
Well, takeover of health care?
If it strengthened the
private insurance system.
I'll take your point. The point is, whatever you want to call
it. I'm wondering
about
the terminology.
Before the government is telling us, yes, I understand the terminology. Let's not worry about terminology. Let's talk about ideas. Obamacare, whatever term. Point is, I want it repealed and would like to be the 51st vote to do it. Tim Kaine thinks it's a great achievement. Here are the things that I think are positive, constructive ideas that would work. One, I think individuals ought to be more in charge of their own health care than government bureaucrats or even, for that matter, employers. And so I've been a longtime advocate of more personalized, affordable health savings accounts where individuals own their own account and can take it from job to job and not have to worry about pre-existing conditions. Second good idea, allow small businesses to band together across state lines. Then they're in larger risk pools, and they'll have more competition, more choice, and more affordable health care. Third, Medicaid is a shared cost of the state and local state and federal taxpayers. I think the states ought to be given greater flexibility in running Medicaid. And rather than having to jump through all these hoops to get waivers to do something that makes sense, and you could take, for an example, home health care, which I think is a much better approach in many cases, and less costly than having people in a hospital. Now, the states have to go through all sorts of waivers for that, and I think the states can run that. There is a provision, for example, though, that should be reenacted, and that is allowing young people to stay on their parents' policies until age 26. The job market is so awful these days for young people graduating from college that even if they do get a job, so often they're underemployed and they're not getting health insurance through it. So that's an idea that I think is a good one that ought to stay. In fact, many insurance companies said, regardless of what happens with all of this, they're going to keep proposing that or keep offering that to parents with children up to age 26. The problem with the current this healthcare tax law that I've heard from so many folks is some people are going to be losing their insurance. Employers are going to pay the fines, excuse me, the taxes. The Supreme Court says it's a tax, not a fine. At any rate, they'd rather pay the $2,000 or $3,000 than provide health insurance, which means they'll lose health insurance. For small businesses that have less than 50 employees, they don't want to get over 50 because those under 50 employees are exempt from the mandates of this health care law. There's some people who are seniors who are worried about whether doctors will see Medicare patients, and we're seeing doctors saying we're not going to see any more Medicare patients. So there's so many things that are detrimental to jobs and opportunity. And my view is we ought to have a system that promotes personal responsibility, allows people to have more affordable, accessible health insurance and health care that is of quality, and rather than having it rationed by government bureaucracies.
Another issue that's been in the news a lot lately, I just want to ask you quickly about, and this also cropped up in this most recent public opinion poll, the issue of guns. You've got the support of the NRA. You've got a strong pro-gun record in your political career. But in this latest poll by Quinnipiac just out this week, a majority of Virginia voters, 52%, say that they favor a nationwide ban on the sale of high-capacity magazines of the type that was used in mass shootings in Aurora, Tucson, Virginia Tech. Would you support legislation restricting high-capacity magazines or other similar measures in the Senate?
Well, I think the tragedy that occurred in Colorado is one we need to look at. I don't think that the magazines is the problem. The problem with it is the individual who shot so many people. And so I don't see where the magazine is the issue. I could get into all the details of it, but the problem is the criminal, not the magazine.
Well, is there, and this is probably too complex a question for a short interview, but is there anything legislatively more that can be done to deal with those individuals?
I think we're going to have to look, and if maybe there can be. When the tragedy hit at Virginia Tech on April 16th, we saw that there was a missing aspect on the criminal records checks on people who have mental health or mental problems. I was the one when I was a legislator across the mountain in Albemarle County who put in the law that all firearms sold from a dealer would have to have a criminal records check for all guns, not just handguns or short barrel guns, but shotguns, rifles, all guns. And so that criminal records check is very helpful. It's important to also check for if somebody's got drug abuse or if they have mental health problems. That should have shown up. But the law didn't have it, so the law was changed. So to the extent there's a better reporting for when there's a criminal records check of somebody who shouldn't be having a firearm because of their either criminal record or their dispensation that would cause one to say, no, this person would be too dangerous to have a firearm, I think that record sharing and information sharing, I think, could be something to look at. You have the situation there where a confidence was shared from a mental health professional about someone with the law enforcement for one of these killers, and nothing was done. So all of us need to be more alert to it. And when those sort of reports come through, that needs to get on those criminal records checks across the country, not just within a state.
And that's something that could be addressed by the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, it could be. Okay. It could be. And in fact, and some of I think that should be those sort of things that what's on the national criminal records check, yes, Congress could handle that. The other thing on Virginia, because we passed our law before the federal law passed. So Virginia has our own laws. The federal has a slightly different law. Now, you don't want to just check somebody's records in Virginia. You want to check their records internationally, for that matter. But nationally, you have to be a U.S. resident to buy a gun anyway. Yeah. But, yes, that's something that Congress could do. States can do certain things as well. But I think that's something that would apply nationwide.
This is switching to maybe one of the most important issues, if not the most important issue that legislators will face next year, the budget deficit and the debt.
You're talking about in Washington, right?
In Washington.
Yeah.
And this is a three-part question. Is there?
If you can ask a question, you might as well make it a three-part.
I might as well. It's a big question. Is there any room for more revenues for the federal government? B, if not, can the problem be addressed through spending cuts alone? Or C, are debts and deficits not a problem?
Well, debts and deficits are a problem. I think our country's losing control of our own destiny because of two things, to outside forces. One, because of our dangerous levels of debt, as well as our counterproductive energy policies have us vulnerable to outside forces. I think the tax code ought to be reformed. The tax code ought to be, I think, more simple, more fair, more competitive, particularly for job-creating businesses. Right now, the United States imposes the worst in the world, highest tax on job-creating businesses at 35%. The international average is 25%. I'd like this to be better than average, so what I've proposed in our Blueprint for America's Comeback would be to reduce it to 20%, and that would create over 500,000 jobs a year. Now, there's some people who have a higher rate than 20 and some that are lower. I think we could get around a table and hammer it out. And so you'd end up with some companies that are paying zero right now. Yeah, they'd be paying more. There's others that are paying, say, 33%. They'd be paying less in taxes. But you'd have a more fair, more simple, and also more competitive tax system. So the second was, can it all be done with cuts? No, it can't all be done with cuts, although there needs to be efficiencies. The federal government can be much more effective, and they need to have more accountability. I do think they should operate the way that the states do and businesses and our households, and that's a balanced budget requirement. And I think the president should have line item veto authority as well, which I used as governor, and most governors have as well. The other aspect is that the federal government can run more efficiently with the less of the redundancy of so many agencies, and this is a government accountability report that actually looked at so many agencies and the billions of dollars that could be saved by simply consolidating and streamlining federal agencies. The other part of the equation that is sometimes missed, but I think really does need to be understood, is that it's not just cuts and things are not static. You're not going to do this just by cutting. You need to also grow the economy. The other part of the equation is, how can we get this economy moving where businesses are prospering and people are working? And when that happens, you get more revenue in. And energy is the one aspect that is forgotten so often. If we unleashed our American energy resources, not just in Virginia, but across our country, to the barren north slope of Alaska, to the Gulf of Mexico, and from the Rockies to the Appalachians, the federal government could get well over $1 trillion of revenue without raising taxes. Plus, you'd have the hundreds of thousands of people in really good paying jobs on top of it, and more affordable fuel and food and electricity, and less vulnerability to outside forces. So that's something that I think ought to be put into the mix when you're getting this patchwork of putting together a balanced budget and a vibrant growing economy. Energy needs to be a part of it. And we are blessed in America with the most energy resources of any country in the world. We have the resources under our land and under our water. We have the resources and the creativity of the American people. What is missing is the political will to unleash those resources. And I aim to provide that leadership if the people of Virginia allow it to me next year.
Governor Allen, it's good to talk with you again.
Bob, thank you. It's
really
great being with you.
I appreciate your time.
And I appreciate your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.